Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk to you about. First, Rotoballer.com, proud sponsor of the show. Great products over there, premium products, premium tools, premium Slack chat, articles, a lot of free articles as well. A lot of great stuff over there. You know, I write a lot of DFS content at Rotoballer.com for baseball and football. We have a lot of season-long content for baseball coming up, even as the season winds on down. So go over to Rotoballer.com, join the premium package, use promo code Bubba for 10% off the package of your choice. Also, if you are into fantasy sports, which you obviously are if you're listening to the show, and you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports, and you live for the short-term gratification at DFS, then you have to try it out. You have to try out Owner's Box, everybody. It's a weekly fantasy sports game on Owner's Box, WFS. Not DFS, WFS, weekly fantasy sports. Head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged throughout live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner Box will be playing out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first-ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. So basically, you sign up. You come play at Owner's Box. Use rotoballer.com/box to sign up. Then you bring your friends in. And you get a little kickback for that. You have your own leagues, weekly leagues, talk all the trash, have all the fun. Hey, but that's not it. In honor of the NFL season going forward, Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit up to $50 when you head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your rewards and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports, a WFS for all you lovers of fantasy sports. Weekly fantasy sports, Owner's Box, rotoballer.com/box for a $50 deposit bonus. Now, to this new episode of Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba on the Bat Flip, episode 51. The fantasy baseball season in 2020 is in the books. It's over. It's done with. Playoffs are starting up on Tuesday, so it's going to be ramping up. And you never know, 2021 is just right around the corner, hopefully COVID-free. So we'll recap real quickly our 2020 season. We've got a lot of listener questions, which is great. Keep those coming all off-season. I will say this much. We'll get to listener questions. Some of them I'm going to give pretty vague answers because we're going to have to dig in more to answer those in the offseason, because there's some pretty deep questions that there's zero chance I'm going to give you a good answer for right now. Like, not a chance. So just giving you a heads up there. But before we get on that, you can get me on Twitter at BDintric and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. He is the man, the myth, and he's not a myth anymore. He's the legend that is just dominating fantasy baseball seasons. Toby, how are we doing, man?
Oh, Bubba, we're doing good. I tweeted it out, but today was just one of those days where you just got to be, things just kind of hit. I went into the day like hoping to win one of my four main event, or not hoping to win, but like I was winning, leading two heading into today, but was really struggling to hold on to one of them. So I would have been, I wasn't even really thinking too much about the third because I knew I needed kind of a perfect day. And Brady Singer came through with an absolute gem. And then Drew Smyly. I mean, you know, we've talked about him on the show a few times now. And I tweeted last week before his first start of last week that this was the start of his Cy Young campaign for next year. And he looked great. And honestly, you know, the ump was questionable today, like just all over the place. I mean, sometimes it worked for him, sometimes it didn't, but some fielding, and I'm apologize because I have a fantasy spin on it. And I know you're hurting because of the Giants, but some of the fielding, man, the Ole fielding where Belt and, you know, it just was like, come on, guys, this is it. This is it. So that was, you know, but anyways, it just worked really well. And then I got a big day in the online championship. I was ninth overall heading into today with just Smiley going. So I just had one pitcher. And so I wasn't super confident. And I got Trey Boo Boo, you know, your guy hit the grand slam. I had Odor who hit two home runs. It was just like one of those days where everything kind of aligns. And it just happened to be on a really important day of the season. So I feel really lucky to have done that. But it definitely feels good. I mean, I work super hard, you know, for a long time on all of these leagues. And so it's nice to win some. I'm definitely happy, but this game is humbling. So you got to keep grinding, you know?
Yeah. You had a hell of a season. There's no doubt about that. A nice paycheck coming your direction too. So that's always good. Gets you ready to play more next year, the platinum probably with Vlad and some other good stuff like that. So
it makes it more palatable, but it makes it, so my wife's like, oh, when you're up on Saturday nights until like 3:30 in the morning and you want to sleep in a little bit the next day, it makes it a little bit more palatable. But no, I mean, it takes, I mean, you know, for those of us who invest our time and our energy and our, you know, our spirit into this game, which is just a bizarre thing to really love, right? It takes a support network to support you. And so it is nice to be able to say, you know, hey, there's a little on there. And Justin Mason is asking if you can borrow $20. I love Jace, Justin. You're the best.
Yeah, Mason always comes through good, and he needs that. He has to probably pay his wife back, as she tweeted out 12 times today. So good luck, Justin. Good luck with that. Yeah, no, it was a fun season. Fun season for sure. Yancey is in the chat room as well, and he's finished 15th in Listener League 2, as he reminded me of. I won that league. I won that league pretty easily, but the other Listener League, I finished like fourth in or fifth. That one was an awesome. There's like four guys. One of them, Baseball Pods, was up there, and I believe it was Joe won it. It went down to the wire. Like some of your leagues you had, it was awesome to watch those guys battle it out. And Joe actually won like three other NFBC things. And so there's like the good thing, I guess, I'm going to put out of all this, why I stumble across all of this is we got a lot of tweets about people that won some big stuff, and they thanked us for that, which means a lot because it's pretty cool. Like obviously we bust our butt to win leagues that we're in. Like you said, you stay up till 3:30 in the morning doing your things every Saturday night. But these guys listen to the show and everything and taking that information and winning things is pretty darn awesome as well. So that was awesome to see. And I'm looking forward to next year. Like I said, some of these questions I'm not going to be able to give you good answers for, but I'm already kind of digging into next season. I know Toby will sooner than later. Like everyone needs a little breather. I'm not going head first into it. I'm like kind of playing around in the kiddie pool, but I'm already started to look at things because the season was wild. That's kind of what I wanted to do as part of our recap was like, you know, the sprint season, we all kind of, some people said it was going to be luck. Some people thought this, that. There was still skill involved. I'm not going to say there was not. There's still a lot of skill involved. There's also a lot of stupid injuries that took place and a lot of just craziness. We talked about the fab process, all that wild stuff. As a whole, like, what was your takeaway from this 60-game sprint season compared to a full season? Like, what can you take from this season that might help you in a full season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. There's been some really like thoughtful discussion, I think, on Twitter just about like what are some of the lessons learned? What are some of the takeaways from it? I think it's really hard to take. It's kind of like I think it's hard to take too much away from it. But then it's also, I think, reminds us of some things I think that I like to think about. I mean, you know, I think one of the things like, I think that starting pitching is incredibly valuable. And I know I'm like a broken record on this, but I really do think that I think we see it more and more each year, but having an ace you know, and I'm not talking about pocket aces here, but having an ace that hits, right? Mm-hmm. Having one of those guys who can provide that type of foundation, especially in today's streaming environment. I mean, pitching was god awful. I mean, you would go into the streams and you would just be praying. Like, I would go into streams and it was like, oh, 3 earned runs in 5 innings and like 4 Ks. Like, this is brilliant. Like, this is great, right? Like, I mean, literally, that's how I felt about streaming pitchers this year. Because as long as it wasn't like 2 innings and 7 earned runs, I was feeling pretty good about it. And I think you really want to put yourself in a position where you don't need to rely on that, you know, in keeping up with some of those categories that, like the Ks. I mean, you look at the difference between the aces and the Ks that they provide along with the ratios. I just think that that's one thing for me that's really critical. I think closers, I think, yes, this year was different, but I think each year we kind of see that, you know, there's a little bit more volatility in that position. And I think managers and front offices are getting smarter, and they're realizing that they don't necessarily need to commit to that one guy every single year or throughout the whole year, or going with maybe a little bit more of a high leverage situation. And then I also think that with the tools that players have at their disposal, we're seeing some massive breakouts from hitters that kind of come out of not necessarily nowhere, but like who can kind of take that next step and can show those improvements. And so I think those are some of the things I think. And I think where I went right, I think, and again, like, and I'm not saying like, yeah, I was right, da, 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 but like for this year, I think the strategy of prioritizing starting pitching doesn't have to be two aces, but just prioritizing starting pitching, fading closers to allow you to get a little bit more depth in hitters or depth in starting pitchers, I think was something that was helpful. And so I think those are the things, but then I also think at the same time, like this is going to sound weird, but like, I think it also reinforces to us that each season is different and there are things that we are not in control of or that we don't know going into a season that have a huge impact. Like Shane Bieber, right? Shane Bieber was freaking awesome this year, right? And I was fortunate to have I had 2 shares of him, right, in 2 of my big leagues. One that was good and actually one team that didn't end up being that good. But I didn't know that he was going to gain a mile per hour of velocity this year. I didn't know that he was going to introduce a cutter, right? So these are things that even if I drafted him going into the year, I didn't know those things, right? Like those were things that happened that I was able, that I was fortunate enough to benefit from, right? And so I think that's the thing is that it sounds kind of weird, but for me, it's almost like the players are important, but I think building a roster that allows you to be flexible, a roster that allows you to adapt and change as these things that we don't control happen is really, really critical. And I think one area that I was burned on, and I think this may be a place where I'm going to change a little bit, and then I promise I'll be short on the answer to this question, Bubba, is...
We've got a long ways to go still.
Oh, God, we do. It's already late. We're 12 to 10 minutes in, but we could go forever. But is, you know, like Victor Robles crushed me in a lot of places. And it made me realize, though, too, it's just that when you have that stolen base rock, you just got to keep on adding those guys who can get stolen bases. Because I think the things that are most dangerous right now in rotisserie baseball are chasing steals and chasing and streaming pitchers. Those, I think, are the 2 things that I want to try to stay away from doing too much next year. It's fine if you're streaming like 1 spot or maybe 2 spots. But when you have 3 guys you can count on and you're circling through the other 3 guys and you're 9 pitchers, and let's say you have 3 other relievers, I think that's a problem. So for me, those are 2 of the things that I want to head into next season not doing. And you just got to figure out how to do it, because if you don't take a Victor Robles type player early or you prioritize starting pitching, like how do you make that happen? And so I think that's going to be the challenge as always. But I think that kind of was crystallized for me a little bit because I lost some leagues. Our Barf League, I think I lost because I overemphasized going after stolen bases and chasing stolen bases, which drags down OBP, which drags down home runs, which drags down RBI. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to learn from the season, obviously, but I think some things that you hit on one thing I want to keep in mind for next season is this was a sprint and everyone's kind of pulling the trigger quickly and making changes quickly and doing things on the fly, where we enjoy a full season of baseball because you can grind it out, because you can do things like that. You don't have to go crazy. You can kind of ride out a little slump and you can save your fab, but you can do things that was different this year and you can trust your process. And, you know, Toby does the rolling graphs. You can see things and make those work that'll change things differently. So don't completely change your philosophy just because you saw craziness this year. Like, don't engulf that strategy. That's one thing you got to kind of keep in mind when you're evaluating 2020 for 2021. Another couple things, like we talked about earlier in the year, Alex Fast talked about it many times and he tweeted it out. Saves you can get late in drafts. Like, I think Hendricks and Kenley Jansen were only like the two in the top 10 that were kind of taken early. And they really weren't that early, but they were kind of towards the top. Brad Hand led baseball in saves.
That's all you need to know.
Yes, that's all you need to know. Like, you just, it just, there's the list of people. Ryan Pressly, I think, finished fourth, and he wasn't even the closer to start. Like, it's just, it's one of those deals. It's a pain in the butt to fab for closers. It is really difficult, and you might blow a lot of money you don't need to blow. At the same time, they're there. So it's kind of a catch-22. Like, don't go stressing about it. Like, we talked about it a lot. There's ways to do it. I like your stolen base comment because that's been a popular topic of conversation around everywhere. And there's a few other things. It's just there's a lot to kind of take in and keep taking in. I guarantee you when we look back at things and start looking forward, we'll see differences of stuff and go, okay, maybe we should do that differently. Maybe we should do this. Things along those lines that are going to be very, very interesting. But I think the biggest thing is take a step back and realize that your process probably wasn't wrong. It's just the season was so quick, you had to make adjustments so quick. And secondly, players you might be down on because they had rough goes, everyone has slumps every season. Like, you look at guys like J-Ram, started off slow, then he started going like fire for three weeks. Imagine if he had four more months. Like, there's all these guys that, I'm not saying they're going to hit like that for 4 months, but say they hit for that 2.5 to 3 of those 4 months. Like, these numbers are like huge. So some guys that really struggled, they might have had a two-week stretch that was awesome. Now start, you know, factoring that in throughout the whole season. Next thing you know, things aren't as bad as they look. So
Freddie Freeman's pace was like 150 runs, 150 RBIs, and, you know, 40 home runs and a .343 batting average over a full season.
Ridiculous stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of things to take away, a lot of things to kind of take with a grain of salt, a lot of things that we'll dig in on more that'll make things quite interesting to see, like, what really matters and what doesn't, because really we don't know what really mattered, but we can at least try to figure that out. What would you do differently? Obviously not much because you won almost everything, but what would you do differently?
If I were to do my drafts over again, this sounds kind of crazy, but I would have taken more starting pitching. I wasn't critical of him, but I was shown his draft board, which without knowing it was him. If I knew it was him, I would have been like, oh, well, that's probably the smart thing to do. But I think he took like 5 or 6 pitchers, you know, in his first like 8 or 9 picks, which seems super heavy, right? We wouldn't bat an eye if you did that for hitting. But for pitching, you know, we were kind of amazed. And if you look at him, he finished consistently high up the board, I think, with a lot of his teams. And you know, the best team that I had in the main event, we started off, and this is actually kind of ridiculous. I was talking to my co-manager, Andrew Matney, shout out to him. But like, our first 5 picks, check this out. Our first 5 picks for the best main event team that I had this year: Shane Bieber, or actually no, Max Scherzer, Shane Bieber, Javi Baez, Chris Paddock, Victor Robles.
I remember when he made that Paddock pick because you didn't like Paddock, and then you took him because he fell to you in the fourth round. You're like, okay, I got to take him, and you still hated it at the time.
Yeah, well, shout out to Andrew. I'm not going to throw him under the bus, but that was his pick.
Yeah.
But even with Paddock, I mean, the thing is, it's like the floor is so much higher for those guys. And so, yes, the pick wasn't right, but I think the 3 out of the 4 may be actually like the way to go. I mean, I think if you look at the guy who won it, Tommy, and again, I mean, we're picking examples, but like Tommy, who won it, pretty much going away. He took a hitter in the first round, but his next picks were, I think he went, what did he go? He went somebody, then Darvish, then Woodruff. Who did he have? Oh, he took 3 of his first 4 were pitchers, but he took a hitter to start off with. I think he went Trey Turner. I actually have this like right in front of me because I was looking at it. Because I think it's interesting to see like which players show up the most. So it was he went Trey Turner, Bieber, Darvish, Woodruff. And so I actually think that's a really interesting – I think that's a really interesting way to start off with three of your first four being starting pitchers, because I really think there's something to having that core three to really rely on. So I think that's what I wanted throughout the season. As the season went on, I wanted more pitching. I was desperate for pitching on some teams because the guys I was throwing out there, the risks I was taking that weren't worth it and ended up costing me big time. I mean, I still won, but I had some opportunities that were definitely missed. It was because I didn't have enough hitting. I mean, I didn't have enough pitching. Hitting actually was great. And so, yeah, I think that's what I would do differently.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to kind of sit back, like you said, and I think a good process, like you mentioned, is going back and look, you know, what the winners do. Like, what was the common theme? Because there's not always one, but there's usually something you can kind of garner that there's certain players or there's certain parts of the draft. Like, I remember preseason, we went through like the rounds, like, okay, these are the guys we'd want this ADP and like going through here. And that's a process. And I know like you do it. I know I talked to Ryan Bloomfield about it before. Before he goes into a draft, he literally like schedules out his picks. Like, okay, in this round, I want one of like these three guys. And like he goes here. If it's like a totally. it's like a flow chart. Like if I get this guy, okay, then I'm going here in the next round. Or like he has like a chart to it. Where does it always work? No, because if you're in sharp drafts, these guys are going to be flying too. But it gives you an idea of what you're looking for, how to build your team the way you like to build your team, and go from there. So lots of ways to do it. We'll attack all that stuff in the off season and get you ready for 2021 because it's a long ways away, but it'll be on us before you know it, especially if we get spring training like you expect, which will be awesome. So we'll enjoy that. I've got the postseason coming up for a month, which will be sweet as well. But let's do some awards. Like the real awards, they'll get handed out here in the next month. Let's do fantasy baseball awards. And Toby and I attacked it in a fun way, like we talked about beforehand. We didn't really talk before we filled out our deal, but we kind of had the same idea in play for this because you could just go, okay, MVP, okay, it's Freddie Freeman or Fernando Tatis Jr. Okay, yeah, that's easy. And I probably went the easy way in pitching. We'll go there in a minute. But when we're talking MVP, Toby, who is your MVP for fantasy baseball this year?
Ooh, well, my MVP for fantasy baseball is you, Bubba.
Oh, goodness.
I didn't write it down, but you are my MVP. I just want to say that. But honorable mention number one, since we have to talk about actual fantasy baseball players, other than you, Bubba, is I put down Luke Voit. And so I think we took like similar but slightly different approaches. I think I was kind of looking for guys maybe later on in drafts who represented a ton of value. I mean, Luke Voit was awesome. Like the end of the season, he petered out a little bit, and I think that's to be expected. I mean, I think that's one thing we saw, you know, in this shortened season is how dramatic the swings, the ups and downs can be during a season, but we kind of forget about that, I think, because it's so long. But he was just incredible. I mean, I think he led all of baseball in home runs. He had over 50 RBI. He added runs there. He was just a producer throughout the entire season for a guy who was drafted around an ADP of 200. So for me, he's kind of the guy that I had at the top there. And I think one thing, again, like this happens every year, but I wasn't in on Luke Voit. Like he wasn't one of my guys, but I had him on my best main event team because, you know, partially because he kind of fell there, but partially because I think, you know, you could see something like this maybe happening if he was given the right situation. And with the injuries that happened right off the bat, he moved into great regular playing time. He moved up in the lineup, you know, and things kind of came together for him. And so Luke Voit was my second MVP after you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Voit was a biggie, obviously. Did some big stuff there where his draft was amazing. He's one of those guys that you kind of had circled, at least I did. Some might have. I'm not saying you per se. But guys had circled if, like, you missed that first group of first basemen. And we talked about there's kind of like a mix, like a not great spot there after for a group. And then it got to, like, Christian Walker and Luke Voit and, like, this group here where, like, okay, I need to get one of these guys. Or then I'm going to Daniel Murphy. I'm in trouble. So it's like he kind of fell in that range there. So I like that quite a bit. I have a first baseman as well. He went about 100 picks before Luke Voit, around pick 85 to 90. And it's a guy I've loved forever. I know we were fans of him because he's like ultra consistent time and time again. And this year he just really burst on the scene. He had like a couple weeks just tearing the cover off the baseball. And in the end, still finished the year great. And that's Jose Abreu. He is nonstop productive for your team. One of the top first basemen and fantasy players in general on the season. Hit 321 with 19 homers. Everything you want to see from him was through the roof. I've already seen people say there's no way he can do it again. And yeah, he probably doesn't hit 321 again. But the power's been there a lot. Like, I'm not going to knock that at all. On that offense, he's going to have tons of chances to drive and run. So that's another discussion for another day. But I still think he's going to be more viable than people are already giving him credit for next season, which means he might just get drafted at the same spot or lower, which is outstanding to hear. But Jose Abreu, Mr. Consistency, he was my MVP, and there could have been many, like we said, but I really loved what he did at a position that was deep but not great deep, all that we talked about many times. So Abreu was big for me. Who's your honorable mention?
My honorable mention. So I went with a couple different people here, and there's a few options I could have gone with. I do have Teoscar on here. Just because, I mean, the price, he was going around pick 280, 290, and he was injured for a good part of the season. And it's almost like, yeah, that hinders him, but also like you didn't have him in your lineup during that period of time, right? And so he gave you 16 home runs and 6 stolen bases with a 300 batting average and over 30 runs and RBI in, you know, 160 plate appearances, as opposed to like the 220, 230 that a lot of guys got to this year. And for me, that's so incredibly valuable because you got the power and speed that we've always been hoping for with him. So I think he's one guy. Another guy, Marcell Ozuna, you know, who just seemed to keep falling in drafts. I think I got him around pick like, 111 or something like that in one of my drafts. So Ozuna just crushed it all year long, batting average, home runs, RBI, just a perfect complement in that lineup. I mean, it was just such a wonderful situation. And then the last one I'll just give a little shout out for is Dansby Swanson, because my God, I mean, he finished top 5, I think, in the league in runs. Only 5 stolen bases, but never didn't get caught stealing at all. Hit 10 home runs. So you're looking at a guy who over the course of a 162-game season was on a 30-15 pace with decent batting average. And, you know, those runs are just so valuable. And he was going to pick 230, something like that. So those are just 3 guys for me who – and I'm more familiar with Teoscar and Dansby because I really like them heading into the season. But I like those guys as just guys who just absolutely dominated, who were going kind of – later than I think most other players.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Marcell Ozuna was almost my MVP. I was really close to pulling the trigger there. He was ridiculous. I saw a tweet, I think, from the Braves. I think he led the National League in batting average and RBIs or home runs and RBIs, something like that. So, yeah, he had a ridiculous season. I'll never forget the 3 home run night. I believe it was in Fenway, where if you're a DFS player and you didn't own Marcell Ozuna that night, you did not make any money. That was just not it because it was ridiculous. He put up like over like 50 or 60 points. It was insanity. So,
I'm going to need that help because I've already lost $150 playing DFS. I think my DFS career is going to end before it even starts.
Yeah. On the bright side, you can replenish that pretty easily now. So that's good. My guy didn't go late in draft, but I have to shout him out. And that's J-Ram. I know we were both huge on Jose Ramirez this year. And I was just sitting back doing the whole, you know, Kermit the Frog sipping his tea while people are talking at the beginning of the season because everyone's freaking out again because J-Ram's not hitting, all these things. Same story as last year, but it only took him about three and a half weeks. From August 26th on, the dude just tore the cover off the ball, hitting 336, 12 homers, 5 steals. He did everything you wanted him to do. He had 10 steals. He had 17 homers. You know, you could do kind of math there, but that's, you know, 35-plus homers pace. We're talking 20-plus steal pace. This is and he hit for average. Like, this is everything we talked about. And by the end of main event season, he was getting drafted in the back of the first round. But I know Toby and I, we talked about it a lot. He was falling into the second round, a ton of drafts. If you were drafting towards the back, you could almost get him with your second round pick. We were starting out drafts at one point with Trey Turner and Jose Ramirez. I remember that very clearly in mock drafts and some actual real drafts. And I'm just sitting there going, getting Jose at that point is just stupid. It was just insane. and he finally got it going. And that's a guy I'm going to be really heavy on again next year because he's still super young. He's 28, like 29 next year. The hit tool is ridiculously good. I just wanted to give him a shout-out because what he did on a team, and I think it's more impressive if you look from an actual baseball standpoint, because the Indians' offense was atrocious. There was no one around him that scared you. There was zero reason to throw him anything to hit, ever. And the guy just kept raking. So J-Ram would be my honorable mention. I just thought what he did was insane.
Yeah. No, so. I mean, he's unreal. I mean, last year he had a quote-unquote terrible season, and he was like 20-20.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a remarkable guy. I like that. I like that call for sure.
Who is your fantasy baseball Cy Young?
My fantasy baseball Cy Young, I am going to go with Corbin Burns, going with kind of the value theme as well. I think he was going around pick 230-ish or so, at least, you know, kind of when the main events were drafting. And he was awesome. I mean, you know, he didn't get the innings that a lot of guys got, but I think he threw like 55 innings and 88 Ks. And there was nothing that seemed super fluky about it. Like if you had him going into those starts, and again, he struggled kind of his last start and then he went on the DL. So maybe something was up. And again, consistency is not something that we should look lightly on. Right. And so that's going to be something we need to think about as we look into drafting him next year. But I mean, he looks like an ace. He looks absolutely great. And you have to imagine I don't know how old he is, but he's relatively young. I mean, as he learns more about like using his pitches efficiently, and, you know, I think he incorporated two new pitches. I need to dive in because I only had him in one like 12 team home league. I need to look a little bit more in the changes he made, but I know he made substantial changes to the pitch mix and the slider's legit. So he just looks like a guy who could be a fantasy force for a number of years here in the future if he can get that consistency going. So he was a guy I think was fantastic for fantasy owners this year.
Yeah, he turns 26 in October 22nd. So silly young.
Oh, dude, in my dynasty league last year, I traded Corbin Burns for Max Kepler. And I was like, oh, man, I won that trade. You know, Max Kepler goes off last year. You know, I'm like, can I have Corbin Burns back? I'll trade you Max Kepler. Trade Max Kepler, but.
That's good stuff. My fantasy Cy Young went around pick 38. I love the Burns call. He was huge. Like you said, the consistency, people get bored. Go look at his like last five or six starts, seven starts or so. It's pretty ridiculous. But mine was Yu Darvish, because if you want to talk consistency, there weren't many more. There's some guys that we're going to talk about here in a minute that were very close to getting this for me. But Darvish was like the farthest down the draft list. Those are the guys I wanted to throw up there. He was awesome. He was one of my favorite targets. Going into draft season, he had a 31.3% K rate this year. He had a 31.3% K rate in 2019. That's pretty consistent. And his walk rate got even better this year than it did last year, given last year had that first half where it was super high and then he was insane in the second half. So it might have been lower in the second half than it was. I didn't dig in that far, but you get what I'm saying. He did everything we expected him to do from what he changed in 2019. So it's one of those changes we could trust. Kind of like we talked about, we'll have to look with certain guys, what can we trust? Darvish was legit. And to top it off, he brought in at least one more new pitch, if not two. So he has like eight or nine pitches right now. It is stupid what he's doing out there. I'm a big Yu Darvish fan. I'll be all over me. And next year, problem is, he's probably going to be a top five fantasy pitcher getting drafted next year. So the value's out the window now. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But Darvish is my Cy Young. It was awesome. I wanted to give him the Cy Young for this because he probably won't win it for real life. So I'm going to give him for this.
Yeah. No, that's a great shout, and I didn't have Darvish on any of my major teams. Really, I think I might have had him in one league. I have him in a dynasty league, and yeah, I mean he was incredible. And what I worried about was the consistency, you know, and he showed it this year again. So we have now a year and a half of just a really incredible starting pitcher. And I agree with you. I think he'll be going back end of the first, early second, heading to next year, barring any type of injury setbacks or anything like that happened over the next little bit. So, definitely a good shout.
Who are your honorable mentions?
So as you'll notice the theme, I like to do include a number of different honorable mentions. I don't like to follow the, I like to draw outside the lines, Bubba. So for me, I have three guys. You know, I think the first one is Kenta Maeda. Again, you know, going around pick 160 to 180, probably 150, maybe. I can't remember where exactly he ended up. Another guy I didn't really have any shares of, but yeah, I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. You know, the Ks weren't as high as some of the bigger guys, but still really, really good. He, his six wins was terrific. Helped out your whip, held out your ERA, just like really fantastic contributor for where you drafted him and a lot of on a lot of the top teams as well. He's one guy who I think is going to be interesting for next year because I do think that there's some, you know, some peripherals that kind of point towards him being pretty lucky this year. The BABIP is way down. I don't have it in front of me, but I feel like it's under 210. And then the strand rate was also pretty high as well, above 80%. So again, a guy that I think we're going to need to be careful of next year in the sense that, you know, yes, he's a very good pitcher, but one of those guys who I don't think we were able to get those couple starts where you get kind of destroyed that we saw happen to almost all the starters this year, including Lance Lynn, you know, where your kind of regression catches up to you, right? And so, so I think he's great, and I'll be really interested to see about where he's going in drafts next year. I think that'll be really, really interesting.
Who are your other ones?
Oh yeah, I forgot. Trevor Bauer. I mean, you know, what can you say? He was great, you know, strikeouts, innings, you know, the wins weren't necessarily there, but you know, he can't necessarily control that. And I think one thing that's fascinating, right, is those, is that, is the 3-day rest. The 3-day rest is super interesting because that seems like something he really wants to do. And he's a free agent after this year. And I'm fairly certain that he may push to do that. You know, so tell a team and I, you know, I think the Reds would be, you know, obviously there's the Driveline connection, but you know, that would throw the fantasy world for a loop. Cause big if time. A guy can go every 4 days, I don't know how many extra starts that is in a season. I can't do that. But if a guy goes 40 starts instead of 30 with the skills and the ball and the volume that he's been able to produce when healthy, and you know, it appears like last year was probably a fluke. I don't think he's as good as this year or maybe the year before that, but I think there's a middle ground there that's still really good that he's probably at. So that's going to be really fascinating. And for him, from a player perspective, if he can do that successfully for a season, and he's always said he's going to do 1-year contracts from now on. I mean, imagine from like just a money-making perspective. I mean, the amount of money you can make on a 1-year contract, showing that you can pitch a full season healthy and well on 3 days rest, like what type of a value that is for a guy. I mean, that could be incredible, just really super interesting. And so that's going to be something to mind. And so we don't go too long. Devin Williams is my other guy that I have on here just because 27 innings, 53 Ks, a 0.33 ERA. I mean, the 53 Ks, I didn't see what Zach Davies' total ended up being this year, but that's probably pretty similar to Zach Davies. So you don't necessarily get like the, and Zach Davies was great, you know, and, I traded for him in a dynasty league because I think there was some changes, concrete changes that the Padres did prioritizing his changeup that can make him effective in the future. But like, you know, that's incredible. 27 innings, 53 Ks, and those type of ratios, even though the volume is smaller, they're so good. And I think what it does for me is it just says, you know, we were all don't buy these guys in the draft. Who were we into during the draft as one of these long reliever guys? Who were some of the guys that we were after?
Like Seth Lugo, who kind of panned out, but like Yusmeiro Petit, he didn't do anything.
Yeah,
those are like the first two off top. There was many that
didn't. Don't draft him because every year there's a guy maybe who's not as good as Devin Williams. I mean, this is
that's insane, like that's like one top one percentile.
for sure. But there are guys who end up being this good every year. Do not draft them. Pick them up once you've seen them doing the work already that makes something like this possible. Yeah, but anyway, he was fantastic.
He was great. The Miami thing was awesome because we talked consistency. He was just great. Like, you could almost lock in six innings. Like, you could almost basically lock in a quality start all day long, which was great this year because, like you said, blow-ups were everywhere. So he was phenomenal for that. Bauer's going to be very interesting for multiple reasons. One, because people say he's doctoring the baseball, so we'll see how that plays out for next year. I don't care, whatever.
They're all doing it.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's why I don't care. But, like, there's people actually pointing it out about him, so we'll see how that affects things. Like, that could get interesting. And then the contract thing is very interesting to watch because I think teams will be more inclined to do it if it's a one-year deal because they're not having to invest multiple millions of guaranteed dollars if he gets hurt or whatever. Okay, screw it. We're done. We can trade him. There's a ton of things you can do in a one-year deal, and you could play the game. Like, you're thinking, well, I don't need his arm for more than this season, so if he wants to go blow it, fine, let's go. Like, there's a lot of things you can do in that respect. And I pulled up his records, and obviously it's different, but let's just say on average a pitcher throws 30 starts a season. Like, some will throw more, some will throw less. If you do that, every 3 days rest, pitching every 4 days, you probably talk in another 10 to 12 starts at least. So you're talking 42-plus starts. Say he goes six innings a start, you know, all of a sudden now he's getting 25 wins maybe, all those strikeouts. Like, that changes things in a big way, a big, big way. So definitely something to monitor, like you said. It'd be fun to see. But my honorable mention, because Bauer was almost my Cy Young over Darvish. I was really, really close to doing that because he was ridiculous what he did time and time again. And this other guy, my honorable mention, like I have to mention him because I wasn't a Shane Bieber guy. I slowly became a Shane Bieber guy by draft season. I think I had him ranked fifth or sixth in my starting pitcher rankings going into the season. I didn't own him anywhere because people were grabbing him before I did. But he was awesome. I'm not going to knock yet. There's still a lot of things I want to see. Like, he had a 91% left on base rate. That's pretty, pretty good. Like, tough to sustain. To be honest, like, really tough to sustain. Just go throw that out there to people watching at home. Tough to sustain that. He's like a career, like 75 to 80% one. So just if you go back to 80%, 11% drop off, it's a lot more runs. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that goes forward. Plus, there's already discussion of him being the top pitcher taken, which I won't do. We talked about it last episode. Neither one of us is there as number one. We agree he's going to go very high, and he should. But at least as of last week, we weren't number one with Shane Bieber. So that'll be interesting going forward. But I had to at least give him an honorable mention because he was ridiculous. Even though he went second round most of the time, he returned almost top billing. So that's hard to ignore. DeGrom was great. Cole was good. But he performed better than Cole probably in the end of things when you look at player raters and whatnot. So actually, I believe when I was at Razzball player raters, Bieber was the number one pitcher in fantasy.
Yeah. He was number one in Ks, number one in wins, number one in ERA. And maybe with
another factor, and like we'll get into this stuff. We'll do episodes because we're going to kill a lot of time or whatever. Where we kind of pick we're going to pick like four or five guys and just kind of deep dive into them. And I think Bieber's a fun one because one thing I really want to look at, and you're smarter at it than I am, but I will give my best effort. And I think it'll eventually will be talked about this offseason. I won't say it won't be. There's a lot of smart analysts out there, but we have to take Bieber's season with a grain of salt because he faced the AL Central so much. When you look at other divisions of who they faced. Not that he wasn't going to be good, but start factoring in maybe two or three starts against the Yankees or a couple starts against the Blue Jays, or they have to face, you know, a team in the West that's actually hitting the baseball, which really didn't happen this year. Things along those natures. Like, that could change things real quickly. So we got to – how do you calculate that? You can't. But it's something you have to at least think about going, okay, that 91% left on base rate maybe doesn't happen if he's facing the AL East once in a while. Things along those lines.
Yeah, and Phil Dussault had a had a good tweet where he was talking about that. I think people were talking about Bieber as number one. He was saying, I think that he had a number three or number four. And that was the reason why is because, you know, not only that, but he also avoided, he faced the White Sox at the end of the season, but I think he missed all the previous things. And he had like three starts against the Tigers and he had a particularly easy schedule. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's definitely a part of it. And I think there's definitely improvements in skill, and he's a lot better than before. And then I also think that there was them luck. And it'll be really interesting to see what Major League Baseball does next year. I mean, I assume that they'll probably move to the full schedule now that they've kind of got things figured out a little bit. But
I would assume so, yeah.
At the same time, I mean, we don't really know where we're what is all going to be happening in the world, right? So it'll be really interesting to see how they do that. If it's the same schedule as they usually have it, is it, you know, are, maybe they, I don't know, maybe they do something different. It'll be really interesting to see what happens. They're obviously playing with the game. They're using this as an opportunity to play with the game a lot, you know, with the playoff expansion and trying all these different things. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see.
No doubt about it. We'll wrap it up with the rookie of the years here. Who was your rookie of the year fantasy baseball wise? Because everyone's going to point to Lou Bob, but when you look at Lou Bob's numbers, folks, I'm just going to say it. It's not as great as one would think. But who do you have for rookie of the year?
Yeah, I'm going to let you go first on this one because you were the first one to put this into the spreadsheet. So I want to give you the go, the green okay. the green light on this one.
Well, mine is Kyle Lewis. And a lot of people want Lou Bob, but I've actually heard some smart people in the industry that actually are on the Kyle Lewis, like in real life, should get it bandwagon, which made me very happy to hear. Because what he did, and it's one of those that this offseason, there's going to be a lot of people picking against him and picking for him. Because if you look at his hitting profile, there's like 50% that's really positive and 50% that really scares you. Like there's a lot of mix and match. And we kind of saw that going into the year. But even I, when I wrote about him early in the season as like a potential late round sleeper, I wrote that, you know, when he came up, he was really, really strong. He's been injured for like 2 or 3 years, it feels like. So I'm kind of let the kid get healthy because the hit tool's always been there. Well, we kind of saw it this year. At the same time, there is a little cause for concern because the barrel rate was 11.7%, which is great. But, we, you know, people had higher expectations, which is crazy to think about. His actual bacon dropped from a small sample of last year. His hard hit rate was down to 35%, where in a small sample last season was 46.5. Again, small samples, but that's what they were. But the walk rate went up. The strikeout rate went down. 28.6 is still a very high strikeout rate. But in this era of baseball, it's one thing I've said many times and others have, you got to change what you consider high strikeout rates now. Because a lot of guys strike out 25% of the time or so. Like it's just the way baseball goes. So 28.6, if the guy's hitting for the power he's hitting for, he's running on the bases, he's driving in runs, you can take that extra 4% or whatever. It's just like, look at Bobby Dalbec. Is he going to hit 280 or whatever the rest of the year? No, because he's striking out 40% of the time. But can he had like 8 home runs in 3 weeks. Could he finish with 20-plus homers and hit 250? Yeah, probably. That's somewhat possible. And still strike out 40% of the time because that's what Bobby Dalbec does because he hits the ball hard. Well, Kyle Lewis didn't really hit the ball that hard. So that's one thing I kind of want to look at. His fly ball rate went up. His ground ball rate went down, which is good. He started pulling the ball more this season. Everything you want to look at went in the right direction. But he did it consistently all season. Besides like maybe one minor slump, he still finished the season very strong. So I think Kyle Lewis should be your rookie of the year. Would you like a higher average? Yes, but he's never been a high average guy in the minor leagues. He's been a power guy, a little bit of speed. You got that. I think he's going to be productive in the similar range for the rest of at least for the next few years.
Yeah, I have the same guy. I think you described it well. I mean, he's definitely – he's going to be one of those guys who's tricky for next year. Because right now, I mean, like you look at his 600 plate appearance, you know, pace, you know, you're talking about a 25-10 guy, you know, and that's really nice. Where you're going to have to draft him will be interesting because, you know, there are some concerns. I was just looking at the rolling average graphs really quickly. You know, the contact rate definitely did a major nosedive towards the end of the season. But at the same time, there were some positives, right? Ground ball rate going down, hard hit rate going way up, you know, towards the end of the season. And the plate discipline is solid. Like you mentioned, I think that can't be underestimated. And the stolen base potential, you know, that's big. He's still young. He plays, well, actually, I don't know how good his outfield plays, but I know he can make some spectacular plays out there as well. So I also have Kyle Lewis. I mean, Lou Bob was great. You know, he obviously struggled mightily second half of the year. Those stolen bases are nice. The homers are nice. But you also paid a hefty price for that, right? You drafted him probably around between pick 60 and 75, you know, around draft time. So, which is still solid production. I mean, I would probably take that from that position, given what he gave you from a stolen base perspective, but he's still, you know, I definitely think Kyle Lewis is my rookie of the year too.
Yeah, with Lou Bob, it's tough because the power speed was great, but the way he dropped off so much, he hit like 230 or something, and that's going to gut you pretty quick. And that was the problem with him. And he's young enough where he's still going to be expensive next year is the problem because everyone's still going to love Lou Bob. But if it's one of those, if he fell a little bit, I believe he's more of like a 270-ish hitter, give or take. Like the hit tool is good. It's just the old saying, like when a prospect comes up, it's okay, proved that you can hit a fastball. He proved that very well. He started hitting off speed pitches a little bit, but then the scouting report started coming out and they found the hole. He has to adjust to that. Once he figures that out, it's going to be scary. It's going to be kind of like Eloy. Eloy had the same kind of deal. He's really strong, wasn't as effective for a while. And then we saw what Eloy did this year. It was just ridiculous, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. So Lubov is going to be very good. There's no hiding that at all. It's just he dropped off in a big way this year, and that was kind of the penny-pinching decision between the two. Who's your honorable mention?
Yeah, and I agree on Lubov, and I think the approach, those are the approach guys, right, where it's like him and Javi Baez have a similar approach. You know, they just attack everything, right, and for better or worse, and we got a little bit of his high, and we got a little bit of his low too, whereas Javi, we just got the low. Yeah. So my honorable mention for rookie of the year, I put a bunch of guys. So, you know, I'll prioritize them. I mean, I talked about Devin Williams before. He's a rookie and he's great. I'm going to go with Jared Walsh, just because if you added Jared Walsh early, you got 100 plate appearances of one, awesome. Like, just wonderful production, right? Down the stretch, key stuff. And so for that, I think, you know, he probably gets my honorable mention from a fantasy perspective. But there's a couple other guys I wanted to mention. Alec Bohm. They always had him at like 2,700 on DFS.
Yeah,
he's, you so know, and or whatever. It was in a lot of my failed lineups, unfortunately. A lot of my Philly stacks, apparently, with Scott Kingery and his 2,100, you know, second base. But this isn't a DFS show, guys. Don't listen to a thing I say about it. But yeah, he was great. I mean, you know, just from the time he came up, 300 batting average, just solid all around. 300 batting average, the runs, the RBIs were great. I also added Jake Cronenworth here because he was kind of the early season version of Walsh. Not as extreme because he didn't hit for as much power, but if you had him in early, you got those home runs, you got those stolen bases, you got that really nice batting average. And I also think the position flexibility for him was critical. I had him on a lot of my teams, and the fact you could plug him in at first, second, short was huge, right? You could really move him around. He gave you a lot of flexibility in your lineups. So for that reason, I wanted to mention Jake Cronenworth as well. And he's got a really solid foundation, I think. And so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up going next year because he really fell off. I was actually surprised looking at his season. I mean, I think he only had 15 RBI and maybe 23 runs or something like that. Is that right for him?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. And so it'll be interesting to see what he does because he does play a lot of positions. I think he's kind of one of those versatile guys where if he ends up going, you know, 250 to 300 in drafts next year, he'll be a really interesting guy in that lineup right there. Who's your honorable mention?
My honorable mention, and I like those ones a lot, Walsh was, like, I had pieces of all those guys along some form of the way, but mine's Tony Gonsolin of the Los Angeles Dodgers, who came on and started 8 games for them. It was very, very effective. 2.31 ERA, 3.8 xFIP, 2.29 FIP, which was outstanding. Unlike Shane Bieber, his left on base rate is only 72.6%, so a little more believable. But a lot of fly balls, striking rate was decent, almost a K per inning, but very, very effective. And he seemed to get better and better as the season went on. Good three-pitch mix between a fastball, splitter, and a slider. Mixes in a curve a little bit, but mainly a three-pitch guy very effective in that result. But one thing I liked about him a ton, only a 4% walk rate, 26.1% K rate, so good K to walk percentage along that line. Limited the hard contact. And then you look at his differences from just last season alone. He pounded the zone more. He got also more chase, which is very, very important. We talk about that with guys like Bieber and a lot of these Indians and some others. They like to play on the outsides of the zone and get the chase rate to go up, higher swinging strike percentage, like everything you want from a pitcher he improved on from 2019 to 2020. And it's just, you know, some will say, well, it takes small sample, take it as it is. It's the Dodgers, man. Like, I hate to say it's lazy approach to it, but they produce pitchers and they do things like this, and they babied him for a reason, and they kept him quiet, and he was actually more effective than Dustin May in my mind. So I think
he was.
I think Tony Gonsolin's a sneaky one. I want to see how the Dodgers find a way to get him in the rotation full time next year, because there's still a lot of moving parts there. But Gonsolin's one of those guys I know we're going to be talking about when we do draft previews about later round target that could be quite interesting for your team.
Oh man, yeah, he was incredible down the stretch too. I mean, yesterday he wasn't great, but man, some of those outings he had were phenomenal. Like I can't remember if it was in Coors where he had that absolute gem last week. Yeah. I think it was. Great call there. Here's a quick trivia question for you.
Sure.
Which rookie starting pitcher had the highest K minus walk rate?
Which?
And I'll give you a
starting pitcher.
What's that? Yeah. And I'm not giving you, let's see, I don't know what the innings, they had to have pitched at least 30 innings. 30 innings, highest K minus walk rate.
Well, it's probably Devin Williams.
Oh, wow, Devin Williams doesn't count, Bubba.
Okay.
He only got 27 innings pitched. Starting pitcher.
Starting pitcher, highest K to walk. Can you at least tell me AL or NL? Probably AL. It's got to be AL. It's either a Royal or a Tiger. Scooble wasn't that great. It was it Singer? It was either him or Buick.
No, but Singer deserves all the praise in the world today. Tristan McKenzie.
Oh, see, he was one.
26%. Really good when he pitched.
But he was inconsistent. Look at his logs. Like, he still would pitch well, but he'd had starts where he struck out the world. And then other starts where it was he avoided the BABIP gods. It was interesting.
Yeah, that's true. He did have a 217 BABIP and an 84.1% left on base.
But his stuff's electric. I'm not doubting that at all.
I'm
really curious to see where that kind of carries over.
Okay. Let me ask you another question. All right. This is because this one to me is the most fascinating one there is. What was Sixto Sanchez's K-minus walk rate?
He was awesome. He had some starts where he didn't strike out many guys, though, because I played him pretty much every single time I could on DFS because he was always too cheap. K-minus walk, he never walked anybody. I'm going to go – because he didn't qualify for your deal, so I'm going to say, like, he threw enough pitches as
– No, he qualified. I think he threw –
Okay, because I'm going to say he threw as many pitches as – or innings as McKenzie, if not more. So let's go 23%.
13.9%.
Because he had so many starts for his thing to strike guys out. Oh, and one of his last starts, he walked the world.
Yeah. His walk rate was still 7%, but he doesn't really strike guys out.
No, he had a couple of outings where he was dominant. But what he does, I think, better than McKenzie is he limits the big innings. I'm going to take that last start like where he walked everybody kind of. I don't think that's the real Sixto. But if you take that one out, I think that K to walk is a big difference there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's just a fascinating one because two starts ago, people were talking top 4 or 5 rounds heading into next year's draft for him.
Well, it'll be funny because he will still go probably at worst top 6 rounds, if not higher, where McKenzie could probably go like 3 or 4 rounds later.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
very similar pitchers.
It's going to be really interesting. Yeah. To see what happens with him. Yeah. For sure. He's going to be a fascinating one for next year.
Now, you mentioned Jared Walsh. Like, the biggest question is, where does he play next year? Because Pujols is there, and there's going to be a new GM.
Pujols still there? I thought his contract ended this year.
One more year? Yeah, one more year of that expensive contract. But new GM in town, they started playing him less and less once Walsh started hitting. So maybe they just finally say, you know what, dude? You're just going to kind of be here, enjoy your swan song. We'll let you tip the cap to the crowds that are allowed in stadiums. And go along that route, maybe. I'm curious. Do you think he plays enough to warrant a decent draft pick? Like, you want to take him too high, but is he worth taking? Or would you rather? Okay, he's probably going to go around guys like Eric Hosmer. Would you rather take an Eric Hosmer that you know has everyday playing time, or Jared Walsh?
I mean, I would probably take Hosmer in that particular instance, but I think that with Walsh, it's a fascinating profile because, I mean, you know, what's his home run per fly ball rate is probably just absolutely insane. It's 30%, right? But at the same time, like, it's pretty clear he's got power, right? Like, he can hit. I mean, a guy with that type of power who has a 14.4% K rate, and that has the peripherals to back it up, I mean, that's pretty phenomenal. That's what you look for, is high contact rate guys who can hit the ball like that. And so I think it comes down, but I think I don't think there's a way that they can go into next season. And what is he, 26, 25, 26? He's 27. He just turned 27. He's 27 in 1 month. So next year will be his age 27 season. I mean, you know, I think he's got to play. And I mean, I think with Pools, they've got to cut it at some point, right? At some point, it's just kind of like, we want to be good. And God, is there more of a throw a guy under the bus move than cutting your GM on the last day of the season? Like, yeah, the last out is made, you're like, you're out the door.
Yeah, they're still having.
Wrong. I mean, he hasn't done much that's worked out. Well, although the Dylan Bundy trade, I mean, that's pretty great. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of like, okay, guy,
Yeah, there's still half the other game still going on. And it's like, yep, you're gone. See ya. Like, we're not going to even wait for the day to be over. Well, like, at least in the NFL, they call it Black Monday because they wait till all the games are over until the next day to fire people. Like, couldn't baseball have waited and have their own Black Monday tomorrow and started firing people? Like, let people get home for a little bit, say hi to their wives and kids.
They did the same thing to the Red Sox manager, right? He was interim and all, but like, they were like, yeah, you're not coming back.
Well, it's like, he had to know, like, they're bringing Joey Cora back. I don't care what they say. Like, it's coming. That was too simple.
Well, but, and also, like, yeah, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Rob Silver was like, how could you not have won with, like, the worst pitching staff ever assembled on the face of the earth, you know?
Yeah, I think the Giants, who had a horrific pitching staff, they were still better than the Red Sox. So
they did have Drew Smiley, though.
Future Cy Young. And Kevin Gausman. That one,
he's got to come back, right? He's got Smiley. I think he'll come back next year.
I hope him and Gausman both come back. Like, pay them. I don't care.
They both really should. I mean, they've got some cooking there. I like a lot of those guys. Dubon, opposite field Jack today. He's made some bonehead plays, but that was
he made me so happy because he started out the season so slow, and I'm sitting there going, "Oh, not my guy." But it's another story of a young kid trying to figure it out. Like, he hasn't had that many pro at bats, and he was just slow. And when you look like his second half of the season, he still finished the year hitting close to 280, which is, I think, outstanding because he's been a good average guy with a little pop. He just kept it going, and I was like, "Okay, there's something to like here." Very happy about this. He's still going to be cheap next year. Multi-position eligibility. Let's enjoy this. So, yes, I'll be back on that. I'll be beating that drum again next year.
And Brandon Crawford just doesn't age, huh? I mean, God, did he do a great stretch or what?
Him and Longoria.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. We could wax poetically about the Giants, and I'll cry because they couldn't win one of the last three games. So, let's get to listener questions. We have quite a few of them, but, like, again, I'll preface this now. I apologize ahead of time because some of these are just impossible for me to answer right now. That's just going to be the way it is. But our buddy Dave Petroziello, he asks, how about the draft spot guess? Let's guess on some draft spots here. So we'll kind of go rapid fire here and guess. Where do you think Jose Ramirez goes in a 15-teamer?
Next year?
Yeah.
Top 10.
That's probably fair. It's going to be interesting because you've got a few guys coming in, a few guys dropping out. Yeah,
I think he probably replaces Lindor.
As I was about to say, he had the Story, Turner, Lindor threesome that kind of took up that kind of like 7 through 10 area somewhere. He probably jumps in there with Lindor. That's kind of where I was thinking. So, yeah, top 10, I'm with you there. I think it's a steal.
DeGrom. I mean, the thing that I think is going to be really interesting is where do the first pitchers go? Because it's clear that there's this new infusion, or not necessarily new, but there's this infusion of offensive talent. And so it's going to be really interesting to see, like, where do guys take DeGrom? Where do guys take Bieber? Does Cole fall? Because there's a sense that he's been a disappointment this year somehow, right? Even though he was absolutely fantastic over the course of the full year, right? I mean, what, 280 ERA, 85 strikeouts and 60 innings and 8 wins or something like that, 7 wins. It'll be really interesting to see how that all flushes out. But I think it's kind of like Acuna and Betts and Fernando Tatis Jr. And what?
Trout.
And then there's J-Ram and Belly, maybe.
Trey Turner gets another boost up.
Trey Turner as well. So I think he's just one of those guys who's a 5-category contributor in the massive sense of the word. Like, just like, he's going to give you 20-plus steals. He's going to give you 20-plus home runs. he shouldn't hurt you in batting average, and he should get you a crap ton of counting stats. And those, all those guys are kind of fall in that category, especially with Trebo and like adding that power component this year, you know, which he's had a little bit of in the past, but not nearly to the extent that he did this year.
Yep. The next guy he has on the list, Freddie Freeman. He went around pick 29 to the end of round two last year. We already talked about the pace he was on this year, ridiculous season that he had. It's just tough because most of the first basemen don't go as high. I would say middle second round, because I still don't think people are going to go crazy to grab him right away. But do you think he's like maybe our next Paul Goldschmidt, end of round one, early round two? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the around the turn is about right. Around the turn to the middle of the second, I think is good. But God, man, watching him hit baseballs,
it's awesome. Smooth.
It's so smooth. Why does the bat look so small when he's holding it? Do you know what I'm saying? It's just like a little stick, and he just and the swing, the like just the finish of the swing is just fantastic. It's almost like he stops the bat. He doesn't go all the way over the shoulder like other guys do. He like hits it and he like stops like right there. It's just it's beautiful.
It is. It's graceful. But I think you're on there. I just have middle second because I think again come draft season it's gonna be pitching and stolen base guys. He doesn't steal bases. He's at a that's going to push some guys to push him down, and you're still going to get a heck of a ball player. So you could reap the benefits there. The last guy he had for us, he went to pick 165 last year, guaranteed to go much higher than that this year, Kyle Tucker.
Where's Kyle Tucker going to go next year?
That's his last question.
I think he'll be kind of like Austin Meadows this year. Well, I mean, I think not quite Austin Meadows, but I think he'll go probably middle of the third round would be my guess. I mean, he stole 8 bases, hit 9 homers this year with probably less than, you know, regular playing time. So you're looking at a probably 30-20 guy over the course of a full season, 25-15 guy over the course of a full season. I didn't see his batting average, but and I also think, you know, he'll be hyped and he'll have everyday plate appearances and he'll be batting cleanup once all those guys leave.
Meadows got picked around 71. So he's not, I thought he was going higher than that, but he was dropping down probably because of the COVID.
That was COVID. Yeah.
So like George Springer went around pick 50. Do you think Springer goes or Tucker goes first?
It depends where Springer ends up, I think.
Free agency. Okay, what about Ketel Marte went around 40? Ketel Marte or Tucker, who goes first?
Oh, the next year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Tucker for sure. Marte's going to be a dropper. Yeah.
What about Starling Marte and Tucker?
Oh, Starling Marte.
Okay. Yeah. And then I'm not even going to ask the next guy because that's an easy one. All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. It'll be another fun one. Do you think Jose Altuve or Tucker?
Tucker. Altuve is going to be a dropper too.
Aaron Judge or Tucker?
Tucker.
Hmm. Well, we know.
Well, yeah, it's so hard to know the Yankee penalty, but
okay, here's one for you.
Yeah, okay.
Lou Bob or Tucker?
Ooh. I think it'll.
Yeah, that one's close.
That one's close. Yeah, that one's really close. Similar profiles. I think Lou Bob has a little bit of an advantage in terms of stolen bases. Tucker may be an average, but I think people value the stolen bases a little bit more. I think Lou Bob's ceiling seems a little bit higher maybe. So, yeah, that's a good one, though. That's a very good comp. I imagine they'll end up in a similar place.
Yeah, I think they'll kind of be following each other in drafts a lot, I think. Our buddy David Mendelson at DMindy02 from the Triple Play Fantasy. He has a question for us. Where are you placing Jose Abreu next year among first basemen? Like we kind of talked about him as my MVP, obviously. Where would you have him at first base? In the main events, he was the 7th first baseman off the board behind Bellinger, Freeman, Alonso, Realmuto, because he qualified there, Olsen, and Vladito. So Abreu went 4th. Where would you have him next year?
Oh, man.
Game pure speculations. A lot of things can change.
I'm just trying to look at the board so that I can get a sense. So after Bellinger, after Freeman, definitely ahead of Alonso, definitely ahead of Olsen. LeMahieu's such an interesting first baseman. I think he'll go ahead of him though too. I think he's going to be the third first baseman off the board, probably. Not counting Real Muto just because he's not really a first baseman. I think it'll be Bellinger, Freeman, Abreu. I guess the way that I would think of how Abreu is going to be drafted next year is he's kind of like JD Martinez in some ways, right? He doesn't have the track record, but he's a 300 guy, not 300, but like 280 to 300 consistently. He's going to hit you 30 home runs. He's been super consistent on that front, and he's going to smash an RBI. I mean, he has every year except for the year that he was injured. So, and he's been relatively healthy outside of last year, I think it was, or the year before that, whatever one it was. So yeah, I think he'll also be in that third round area.
Yeah, I agree. He should be. I'm with you that he should be the third one off the board. I'm already seeing like the talks coming. I can already picture it now. He doesn't do this. He won't do it the way he did it this last year. And next thing you know, it's, well, Vlad's a year older. Let's move Vlad up. Matt Olson can rebound. And I like Matt Olson, don't get me wrong. And then, you know, maybe Anthony Rizzo has a big spring. Like, there's a lot of things I can see taking place. But I agree, Abreu should be the third one off the board. That's what I'm hoping for. And if he falls, then better for us. But that's where I'd be looking on that one. Jeff Zimmerman from the Launch Angle, from Fangraphs, from kicking butt in a lot of fantasy leagues this year.
Crushed me in our 12-team league.
What was the overall effect of the NLDH during the sprint season? So we'll start with that. He's got a three-parter here. So like, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. Obviously, the season ended about 6-7 hours ago. But what do you think the overall effect was, like, at least for you, when watching the game, analyzing the game, playing fantasy, of the NL having the DH?
This is all anecdotal because I haven't had a chance to crunch the numbers. But what stands out to me is there's nobody that's really jumping out. And correct me if I'm wrong, but like, there's nobody that jumps out as like having super benefited from the NLDH, right? Because I think teams were really smart at platooning. So they use it as an opportunity to platoon or to give guys a day off or to move guys who were maybe worse in the field, you know, give them a few less days in the field. And so I think that I'd be interested to see. I mean, I'm sure Jeff is going to do some research on it. So I'll be fascinated to see how it impacted like the pitchers and stuff like that as well. You know, I'm sure it had an impact, but it also doesn't seem to. And again, it's all dependent on like where the value was, but it definitely seemed like NL pitchers still, there was more good NL pitchers. Am I making that up? But again, it could just be who's in those leagues. And so that'll be interesting to see what kind of an impact it did have, because there's nobody that even jumps out at me, you know, it's like, oh, it's going to benefit like Eric Thames, you know, but even him, it was like, there was nothing, anything consistent. Like, I can't think of a guy who was like the DH who played all the time and got all those at bats. So think about it from an offensive perspective, you know, it gave some players more value because they had less off days, but it was really hard to see guys who weren't platooning in that particular role. And then on pitchers, I think it certainly had an impact, but it'd be interesting to see what that was. I mean, whether because the announcement happened so late, whether NL teams were able to make the roster changes that they needed to maximize the value of that position. That'll be what's interesting this year to next year, I guess.
Yeah, that was my biggest comment I was going to make, is when this happened, American League teams have designated hitters on their roster. The NLs didn't have those. They have guys that can pinch hit, that can play defensive replacements. They weren't built for a DH. Like, now you can go and sign a JD Martinez in the National League. We talked about it when he's a free agent. He only had 15 teams that could sign him. So it knocked him down. Now you have a legit 30 teams that can sign a guy that can't play defense, but that can hit the baseball. Like, I can't think of off the top of my head at the moment, but there's a lot of guys we know that can't play great defense, that like Kyle Schwarber, he's actually played decent defense in left field. I'll give him credit for that. how long is that going to last for a guy that size, really? Just be realistic about it. But he can DH for the next 10, 15 years, probably. Like, really good if he can move around both leagues. So I think that's a big factor, that give these guys a chance to actually build a roster with designated hitters. That could maybe give more of an impact. So I agree, National League, off the top of my head, and just from playing, it didn't feel like it had that big a difference for pitchers. If anything, I think it helped pitchers go another inning or so in certain games they weren't getting pinch hit for. You saw guys go out there to start other innings. I think making pitchers throw to three batters out of the bullpen had a bigger effect than the DH, personally. That was goofier than goofy. But, yeah, somebody smarter than me will make a big article on it and make a lot more sense than this. But at first glance, without digging into all the numbers, there wasn't a big takeaway, because most National League teams just kind of use, like you said, this day off to do things along those lines that weren't obvious designated hitter things, because most guys, if anything, it opened up another spot for guys to play every day. So you had an extra guy playing, but they just rotated him around. So that maybe is the biggest takeaway. His next question is, do you think it sticks around in 2021?
I do think that it sticks around in 2021. I think it's hard to go back. You know, it's hard to, like, you know, not have pitchers bat for a full year and then be like, oh, grab that stick and go out there. You know what I'm saying? So I do think it's there, but I think it'll be one of those concession type things where it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, you guys are the players are going to let us expand the playoffs again for 2021. And in return, you know, we'll get the DH, which, you know, makes more players who have jobs and things like that. So I think it'll be part of that. I just hope it's done early enough where teams can kind of do it. They can kind of construct their rosters thinking about it and get some guys who belong in places where they can get plate appearances because they're good hitters, but they suck defensively.
Yeah.
God, when does Eloy become a DH? Because
sooner than later. So that's another guy. Just throw him on the list. Guys that can DH. But yeah, I think they'll have it again next year. I think it's a bargaining chip for the next a bargaining agreement in the next year that they'll use that because the players want it. It's like you said, it's another guy that can make money. So that's one angle they have to try to help the cause. And I think we all learned this year, I don't think there was an issue having it. I think it actually helped the game out, because who wants to see pitchers hit? Like, really, no one does. So I think it does happen. Teams can prepare properly. His last part of the question is, when will Rob Manfred get around to announcing him if they won't have one?
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. He'll do whatever he can to leverage it for whatever, you know.
It'll be at the most inopportune time for the most benefit for him.
Yeah.
That's when
they're going. It's just, I'm so cynical about the way he handles baseball. So we'll see. But I hope it's early so that teams can actually build their rosters accordingly. That'd be really nice.
At SMMS79, he had a good year this year. Came up just short, got screwed over. He texted us some things that were rough. But I know it's early. Do you have a bat or an arm you're targeting for 2021 based on their 2020 performance?
Not really. You know, I'll just throw out a couple. One guy I think it's going to be really interesting to see where he goes is Ozzie Albies. He was injured for most of the season, so he wasn't there. There really wasn't much talk about him at all. Like, he just kind of flew under the radar, I feel like. And I'm going to be really interesting to see whether he goes in similar spots to where he was going last year, or whether he falls a little bit because we have this newest sample of guys who have done really well. And I think he's an absolutely fantastic talent. I mean, he had 120 plate appearances, 6 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 2020. You know, he's a beauty. Yep. You know, I would love to have him. You know, if I prioritize pitching early and I get him as my first hitter next year, sign me up. I think he's going to be, fantastic. So that might be one guy, just because I'm hoping that because he was injured last year and doesn't have as much hype, maybe he's kind of like, not that he's post hype because he's really good, but whether he maybe slides back middle third round, late third round, you know, kind of that area, I think would be really interesting to see. So I'll be targeting him. One other guy that I think I'll probably be targeting a lot is Sal Perez. Yes. I'm going to be very interested to see where he goes in drafts, because he was on my list for MVPs. I mean,
sure if you saw my tweet earlier today, but it compared how much better he was than JT Realmuto.
Oh, was it? Was it? Oh, God. I mean, it's true. I mean, he was phenomenal. And, you know, early when we did the catcher preview, we were just like, get JTR, get Salvi. Like, this is, that's the combo. That's what I was doing early in the draft season. And I really moved away from that. Scared about the TJ and all that stuff. But Salvi, I mean, the batting average isn't going to stay. But, I mean, him with the juicer ball is just a really nice thing. And so, yeah, if he's not top 100, I'm going to be all over that. So those are maybe two guys. How about you?
Couple guys I want to look at more into and probably target more, at least that I really wasn't paying attention to going into the year. Brandon Lau, second base for the Rays. He was going undrafted in some leagues, and look what he did this year. So he's a guy I want to look at. And on the pitching side, you mentioned Corbin Burnes earlier. I want some shares of Corbin Burnes. I don't know if I can pay the price for Corbin Burnes, but he's a guy I want. And another guy similar to the production we saw, like not as good as Burnes, obviously, but a guy that was consistently really good that I had on some teams that I'd like to have again this year, Framber Valdez. I think he's legit. He's young. He's still developing his pitch mixes, but he's still very, very good. So he's a guy you can get later in drafts, like your SP 4 or 5, I think, and make some damage there. So he's a guy that I'll definitely, that I found a liking to in 2020 that I'll be going to in 2021. All right. Roma Kormaski at Romac988 asks, how will you approach assessing breakouts this year for rankings? How will you differentiate between small sample size results and genuine change in potential outcome over a full season?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think there's a couple pieces to this. I think this is where projections are incredibly helpful, because I think projections help us see a little bit like this signal through the noise. I think that's what people say. Like, you know, projections, I think, are good at tackling these guys, generally speaking, with some limitations. So I think you look at the projection, you say, okay, this is kind of what the projection system is seeing. And then I want to dive a little deeper and see, like, what were the changes that they made? Were there concrete changes that they made that have resulted in this, right? And then also, you know, just because they made a change, does that change seem sustainable? And, you know, what does their batting average line up, right? Does the runs per plate appearance and the RBI per plate appearance, and really like looking at things in a very granular way. Like, does that resonate? Like a guy like Teoscar is a good example. Like second half of last year, it was very clear that he made some dramatic changes. And that's one of the reasons why I liked him a lot. And he was part of my bold predictions, is because I saw, you know, the projection systems aren't going to take that small of a sample and change his projection dramatically. Right. And then also understanding that if he's really good, he had opportunity to get plate appearances. And so a guy like that, you know, yeah, the 6 stolen bases was lucky. I mean, like you couldn't have banked on that based on what he'd shown so far. But like, so like looking at that, but then also looking at what he did this year, I'm going to look at that. I'm going to say, I mean, that's great, but I don't think he's going to do this again, right? Like this isn't a sustainable thing for a full 162 game season. So I'm going to want to see kind of, you know, what do I think is about what he actually is talent wise, and then kind of go from there. Like I wouldn't, like right now, I mean, what he projects probably for like 18 stolen bases on a 600 plate appearance pace. No way I'm giving him that. Like, right, I'm not going to even give him 10. I'd probably give him like 8 stolen bases for the year. And so I don't know. I think it's a matter of looking at the projection and seeing what that looks like, and then seeing whether I agree with it or there's maybe a reason to be a little bit more confident that he could do better or outperform it. Or if I'm maybe like, I think he's done about all he can, maybe he's going to regress a little bit from his projection. So I think it's kind of like the projections give me a general sense, and then I'm going to use kind of the other analytics to build in like what the range of outcomes I think might be for that guy.
Yeah, no, I'm going to use a lot of similar stuff there, obviously. But if guys overperformed, underperformed, why did they overperform, underperform? Was it just kind of they were in a slump? Like you said, did they change something? What was the reason behind this? And that's maybe not possible to answer, but a lot of these guys, you can kind of see things were different. The ramp-up periods, you got to think about that for slow starters. A lot of things were weird this year. So I'm going to take a lot of it with a grain of salt. Look at their 2019 seasons. Where did things differ? Watch spring training as close as we can. Hopefully we get something to go off of there. and then use the projections, like you said, because that's what they're there for, and they're pretty darn good at what they do. So, and it's going to be tough for them to make projections too, because what do they do with a 60-game season? That's going to be interesting as well. So we'll have to see how all that works out, but definitely going to use the results of 2020, but I'm not going to like say, oh yeah, Freddie Freeman, he's going to do everything he did and more in 2021. I'm going to be realistic about it and think, okay, there's a good chance Freddie Freeman has like a 3-week slump somewhere along the season, or at least a combination that makes a 3-week slump, and he hits like 315 or something. I don't know, but just be really realistic about how it all played out.
Here's a question. What was the highest BABIP this year?
Highest BABIP, probably like 570.
412 of qualified hitters, I should say. Qualified hitters, Michael Conforto, right? Mm-hmm. Michael Conforto, who we're talking about as like breakout guy. He broke out this year. You know, this is the year for him. He had a 412 BABIP. Guess who had what was the lowest BABIP we saw this year?
Probably like 112.
201.
Wow. So Rugno Darder was better than I thought. Carlos Santana at 201. My goodness.
201. Eugenio Suarez at 202. Max Muncy at 206. Rizzo, man, 218. Calhoun, 208. Schwarber, 225. Brian Reynolds, 227. So those are the guys. I would go down there and I'd just circle those guys and I'd be like, these are the guys I'm going to own in 2021. I mean, not all of them, but like a guy like Santana, who's probably going to plummet in drafts. He's older, right? You know, things like that. But again, like, you know, he had an 18% walk rate and a 17% K rate. He still managed 31 runs and 26 RBIs and 7 home runs, despite, you know, a 201 BABIP, right? Eugenio Suarez, the same thing. Like all the top three guys hit under 200. And so they're probably going to get hurt next year. But is that something that's going to happen over the course of a full season? Probably not. And so that's like a really good bucket to buy from. Whereas the guys at the very top, like a Conforto or a D'Arnaud, who hit 411, despite, or like he had a 411 BABIP and hit like 315, despite having like a 28% strikeout rate, right? Like things like that. And obviously it depends where they fall and how much you have to pay for them. But like, those are the types of things where I think on the extremes, you can really, you can get some value from guys and miss out on some guys who just avoid the guys after career years generally. I mean, I think the more and more I see, the more and more I'm pro that.
Definitely one approach to take there. And I want to thank everybody for their questions on tonight's podcast. There's a couple that we'll get to in the next couple of weeks that are more centric to what's coming on for the 2021 season. But I'm just going to pass on those tonight as we're running a little long already.
It's late.
What was that?
It's late.
Yep. So you can find Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm on Twitter at BDEntric. Thanks for listening, everybody, this year. Thanks for having a great season. Congratulations to Toby on a monster season. But this was Bubba and the BatFlip, episode 51. Catch you guys later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.